Greetings, everyone, and welcome to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on your water rights when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our forefathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small, and you shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight, and a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our federal constitution these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." That's at Article 1, Section 10 in our federal constitution. Now, in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away. Then in 1964, President Johnson took our silver away. And in place of these just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, the second, and the fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. They gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Well, now in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School conducted twice a year here at the law school. To learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call right now and order one. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're talking about water and your water rights. Now, if you're a small landowner, say you got 25 acres, you can drill a hole most any place in the United States. Not every place, but most places in the United States. And you can tap into the water that's beneath your property over here, and that's your property down to the halfway point, down to the center of the earth. I guess from the center of the earth on, it belongs to the Chinese or somebody else. Now, nobody's going to drill that deep. So for practical purposes, what's under your ground, you own, you buy that, unless you've waived your mineral rights or your water rights or something when you bought the piece of property. Surface water generally is treated a little differently. But the groundwater, of which half the people in the world, I get that, one half, one out of every two, 50% of the people in the world get their water out of the ground. That's a strategic error, and that's because the groundwater is drying up. Aquifers are going dry. And if we depend upon groundwater at some point in time in the future, we are going to be sorely disappointed. That's where the world is headed. And there is an emerging water crisis. Not only do you have global warming and population explosion, and you have massive debt, you know, all the problems that Katie Couric and Brian Williams are reporting to you, you know, on the Pablum NewsHour. But in addition to that, there are some emerging problems described in Bible prophecy as being the Great Tribulation, coming together coming to a head at a time in world's history when the population of the world is at a critical mass stage in which it doubles every 32 years now. Every 32 years, population doubles. We are adding to the world's population right now in the year 2005, 2006, 2007, then 2008, 9, 10, so on, 100 million people a year. Well, every 10 years, the population grows by 1 billion people. Now, there's 6 billion people in the world, and so they tell us, well, every 64 years, the population's going to double. Well, there's a thing called geometric progression. That is, the 100 million people are going to be breeding too, you know. And then, so you add this up, you know, and pretty soon, every 32 years, you got a doubling of the world's population. So let's be reasonable and just stretch it out to 50 years. We're in the year 2007, so 50 years from now, you know, giving it plenty of time, you're going to have a doubling from 6 billion to 12 billion. Then in 50 years, you're going to have a doubling from 12 to 24. Now, by the turn of the next century, this is the 21st century, and then it'll be the 22nd century. Okay, 100 years from now, you're going to have 24 billion people in the world. Let me ask you this. If you can't feed and adequately take care of 6 billion today, what do you think you're going to do with 12 billion tomorrow, or 24 billion, or 48 billion, or 96 billion? And somebody says, oh, something will come up. It always does. Yeah, there is something coming up. And it always does. And what's coming up is called the Great Tribulation. It's a massive dying of people described in Bible prophecy as being the worst time in the history of the world, that it would probably dwarf Noah's flood in the overall sense of the number of people killed. That's pretty serious. And I've reported to you a time or two from the scriptures how it talks about a third of all the people in the world being killed, and then a fourth of all the people in the world being killed during this 3.5 year period called the Great Tribulation. Now, the reason I bring this water problem to you is because water is going to be one of the catalysts. Oil is number one. It is the catalyst for being in the Middle East and Iraq, Iran, and Afghanistan today. But water is right behind it. And so I was, last program, I was telling you about Texas. Just to pick a state, in a report called findarticles.com, talking about Texas, using the great wealth of information and recommendations provided by the planning groups, the state of Texas enacted Water for Texas 2002. It's the first water plan, state water plan, since the 1997 legislation. And this action approved 4 of the 6 recommendations common to all of the regional plans. And the changes were to continue the planning process, provide adequate funding for regional water planning, provide adequate funding for implementing water plan recommendations, and to clarify provisions in the 1997 Act on unique stream segments. Now, in Texas, all of the surface water is considered public water, but groundwater is privately owned. So in Texas, the right of capture allows a landowner to take as much groundwater as he or she desires without regard for their neighbors, as long as the water is put to a beneficial use. Well, back in 1991, a fellow by the name of Ron Pusek, P-U-C-E-K, I'm going to pronounce it Pusek, brought many of South Texas water issues to a head when he opened his Living Waters Artesian Spring catfish farm just outside of San Antonio. News reports indicated Mr. Pusek was using enough water to raise catfish as would be necessary to support about 250,000 people, approximately the amount of water used by one-fourth of the population of San Antonio. Now, remember, boys and girls, this is one catfish farm. So there's one man, one catfish farm, and he's taking enough water out of the aquifer to support one-fourth of the population of the city of San Antonio. So if we had 4 catfish farmers around that neighborhood, we could then take as much water out of the aquifer as the entire city of San Antonio with 1 million people. So 4 people can take as much water as 1 million. All right, got the drift of that? Now, Pusek had spent over $1 million to drill the world's largest water well. It was a well that was capable of producing 40,000 gallons of water a minute. this was use or was this use of water a waste? Should anyone be able to use that much water? Well, certainly the city of San Antonio had grave concerns about their future water or water supply, most of which comes from the same Edwards aquifer that Mr. Pusick was pumping from. Now, the law and the agricultural community were definitely on Pusick's side, and they found it easier to point out that this issue of water to grow a food crop seemed much less wasteful than using water to keep lawns green in the summertime. Now, they got a good point there. Remember that half the water that we use in this country is used to just keep the lawns green. Back during World War II, when we had food rationing, we didn't have many lawns. What we had was people dug up their lawns and they planted gardens, and we produced food there. Now, there is no water shortage any more than there's an oil shortage. And let's just pause right here and let's get our breath. There's enough water that falls on the state of Arizona every year to furnish all the water needs of the people of Arizona. There's enough rain that falls on California to satisfy all the needs of the people of California several times over, as a matter of fact. Now, the problem with all this abundance of water is the cost. It kind of reminds me of electricity. See, there's plenty of sunshine out there to produce all of the electricity that all of the people in the world need. Do you know that? It's just that the photovoltaic cells that you have to put up in order to make it economically viable is so expensive that it's cheaper to buy it from the power companies. Let me give you a quick illustration on that. 20 years ago, I looked into the cost of putting in solar electric power here. You can have wind power, you can have solar electric, you can put in a steam generator, you can put in a diesel generator, you can get power from the power company, you can get hydroelectric power. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to generate electricity. Now, we all want electricity. Has everybody agreed to that? And if you're one of those that says, well, no, I don't want electricity, well, good. Go out to the meter, shut it off. And you live a week without any electricity and then come back and report to us and tell us how you liked it. Why don't you do that? You know, I have people, you know, that call here and they come up with some of the darndest ideas, kind of like kids, you know, on Art Linkletter. Kids say the darndest thing. Humans say the darndest things about all kinds of subjects. Whether it's politics or, you know, economics and so on, they come up with these various and sundry ideas. But when we get down on the bottom line, the businessmen of the world are actually the movers and drivers of the world, because we're the guys that sit here and say, well, is this economically viable? And most of you people go to college, and when you come out of college, you'll never be the same again, because you can't add, can't subtract, can't multiply, can't divide, can't think, can't work. And so you go out into the real world in this Alice in Wonderland world that's been created for you. It's kind of like Disneyland. And then you go to work for some company paying you $100 an hour to stand around pinching the girls on the ass as you're drinking water at the water cooler over here. And whatever it is that you do for this company, which is working for the government on a government contract, and you're making all this money and everything is honky-dory. Nobody ever stops to think that the money that you're getting for your wages and all this wasted time, effort, and energy over here has to be paid for by somebody that actually goes out and works and produces something, because you consume just as much in the way of food, clothing, and shelters as the rest of us. So anyway, 20 years ago, I took a look at this this electricity. We don't have enough wind here. Diesel costs more than it does the power company to deliver it to you. And my conclusion 20 years ago is that the power company can deliver electricity to me for about half what it's going to cost me to produce it myself. The same thing is true with water and sewage and all these other utilities, you know, the telephone and the rest. And so the bottom line is, if you have to choose between spending $500 a month buying electricity from the George Gordon Power Company through your photovoltaic cells, or $250 a month buying your electricity from the White River Valley Electric Co-op, you don't have to be a real mental giant to figure out that you're going to continue with the electric company, just like I did. But I just did the arithmetic here the other day, and now it's the price of electricity has gone up over the last 20 years. And now it costs the same amount of money over the next 20 years for me to produce electricity myself with my own electric system or buying it from the power company. It's the same deal. Out in California, they're getting more serious about energy conservation. And so what they're doing out there in California, they're putting these photovoltaic cells up on top of the roof of your house there in Stockton, California, and based upon the number of sunny days that you have and the amount of power you can get and the amount of tax breaks you can get, those people can actually save money on their power bills. And there's a few examples of people that are selling power to the power company. They get a check every month off of the electricity they produce on their own lot. All they got is a house on a lot, and they're selling electricity. They got all the electricity they can use, and they sell it, the surplus, to the power company. Now, that's really neat. In Germany, the people over in Germany, they woke up to that problem years ago, said, well, we got to pay $6 a gallon for gasoline, you know, so maybe instead of burning this oil in our power plants to make electricity, maybe it would be cheaper for us to put this in. And so the people of Germany are trying to become energy independent. The people of France are doing the same thing. So they went with nuclear power, and the Germans are going with solar power, and the Americans are sitting over here with their thumbs in their ears and can't figure out what the hell to do next. And so our balance of payments deficit is going up through the top of the roof, and it's approaching $1 trillion a year. It's unsustainable. Everybody knows that, but nobody knows quite what to do next. On top of all of that, now I come along and I say, did you know there was a water problem on top of that? Now, I said there's plenty of water out here, so get your pen and paper out here and let me show you how this is done. In areas of the outback of Australia, for instance, or in the Sahara Desert, or where there's a shortage of water, people put in what's called a cistern system. Now, this cistern system is just like the photovoltaic cells. It is very expensive to put in. I'm going to put one of those in because I'm going to get off of my hole in the ground well water, and I'm going to live off of surface water, the amount of water that just naturally falls here. Let's go to Tucson, Arizona. That's about the driest place in America, isn't it? It may not be the driest, but it's one of the driest. Now, if you've only got a 50-foot lot, I mean, it's 50 feet by 100 feet deep, that's 5,000 square feet, in downtown Tucson, Arizona, there's enough water that falls out of the sky on your 5,000 square feet of real estate to furnish all of the water that you can use in a year. Did you know that? Yeah, I'm going to do the math here for you on my famous Texas Instruments EL1197G3 computer here, little thingy on my desk here. Let's take your 5,000 square feet. It rains 10 inches a year down there in Tucson on average. 10 inches a year. So take 5,000, plug that into your calculator, times 7.5. Excuse me, let's do 10 inches first, times 10 inches. And that gives you 50,000 cubic feet. 50,000 cubic feet divided by 7.5, which gives you, let's see if I've got that right. I didn't get the right number there. I do this over again. 5,000 square feet times, I'm going to go with a foot first. That's 12 inches. And that would give me 60,000 inches. Now, I got to divide that, don't I, by 1,728, I believe. 1728. Yeah. 3472. When I worked this out the other day, I had enough water coming off of my house to supply my 1 year needs on my 5,000 square feet in Tucson. Now, the normal calculation is used with 1 acre. And there's a plan where you collect the water on your acre, you dig your trees in, and you run the water down into holes around your trees, and you can actually landscape, take the water that falls, it'll water all of your plants. They calculate 1 acre. I calculated it down to 5,000 square feet, and you put a cistern in your backyard. Now, here's where the rub comes. This cistern is going to cost you a bunch of money. I've got one on the drawing boards here for the farm. And on the farm, it's going to cost us in the neighborhood of $12,000 to put in a 60,000-gallon cistern that's about 30 by 30 by 8 feet deep. I got to have one that's a little bit bigger because I've got some cows to water over here. But then you take your annual rainfall, 10 inches a year, 12 inches, 30 inches, whatever you've got, and then you dig your ditches around your property and you channel the water into your aquifer. You collect the water off of your roof and it runs down into the drain gutters and then from the drain gutters down the downspouts and then into your piping system and then into your, it can be your personal aquifer. I call it a cistern. And then you pump out of that cistern, filter your water, and run it through your house. Then run it down your sewer and run it outside your... And you people can solve your water problem right there in your local area. There's enough water that comes out of the sky to do this, but the cost of putting in this cistern and this water system is so much greater than the amount that you're spending on your local water supply that it just is a no-brainer for you to buy water from the city, even though it's fluoridated and chlorinated and so on. Now, leaving that subject here for a second, going back here to Mr. Pickens or Mr. Pusick, P-U-C-E-K, Pusick. The catfish farm was fully operational for only one season before it was forced to shut down because they didn't have the proper permit to discharge the wastewater in the nearby Medina River. So in 1996, Pusick reopened the project on a smaller scale using a holding pond so that no water would escape from his property. Pusick did not need any discharge permits if the water did not leave his land. The Edwards Water District determined that the project's holding pond design was faulty and that water was indeed still being discharged into the Medina illegally. Faced with the prospect of enormous legal fees, Mr. Pusick agreed to once again shut down. In the farming community and in the eyes of those who champion private property rights, Mr. Pusick's use of all of the water that he wanted was totally lawful and proper, and many hoped that he would continue his fight to validate a property owner's legal right of capture. The city of San Antonio was relieved that the catfish farm wasn't operational, but was still very concerned about their capability to assure future water needs. Some believe Mr. Pusick and his backers were merely angling for a big buyout of their water rights. In fact, the fact is that in December of 2000, the San Antonio Water System agreed to buy the catfish farm and its water rights for $9 million. The sale brought an end to almost a decade of contentious squabbling and terminated the possibility of future litigation. The sale may also have caught the attention of other Texas entrepreneurs who know how to make a buck. So let's just pause right there and think about this. Now, this guy bought this property, drilled $1 million well, started raising catfish over here, built a couple of ponds, ultimately sold it for $12 million to the city of San Antonio. All right, did he make a profit? More than likely. Now, other guys are walking around and they say, well, wait a minute, we've got the same water shortages developing in Houston and Dallas and Austin and other places around Texas. Now, listen to the next part of the story because this is just the tip of the iceberg here. Texas is well known for its oil barons, but it may become known for its water barons in the future. Water, not oil, may become Texas liquid gold. Boone Pickens, T. Boone Pickens, the former oil man and corporate raider whose takeover bids once struck terror in the boardrooms of America, is now actively trying to corral and market the water. Pickens owned ranch land on the high plains of the Texas Panhandle. His hand sits atop the southern tip of the Oglala Aquifer, one of the world's largest underground reservoirs. The Oglala is the source of groundwater and irrigation for 8 states in a 174,000 square mile area that stretches from South Dakota to Texas. Pickens has offered his neighboring ranchers $350 per acre for their water rights if he can secure enough acreage to provide adequate supplies of water for export to major Texas cities. Pickens believes he can build a billion-dollar pipeline to cities such as San Antonio, El Paso, and Dallas, and Fort Worth. And he's betting that rising demand for water will cover the costs of the massive project and make a profit. Pickens is not the only big-time operator to see the possibility of megabucks in water. Billionaire brothers Ed and Lee Bass of Fort Worth, also oil barons, bought 45,000 acres of water rights in Southern California in 1997. They sold those water rights to the U.S. Filter Corporation, which provides water to a thirsty San Diego. The water rights brought a cool $250 million, and the brothers are said to be interested in repeating their success in Texas. Not everyone in Texas is happy about transporting water from the Texas outback to fast-growing urban centers, but the movement of water over long distances to urban centers is an ongoing theme around the country. Now, the gasoline that you people use up in, say, Boston and New York comes on a pipeline that stretches down to Texas and Louisiana. Do you know that? Now, it's economical. You're paying around $3 a gallon, you know, for gasoline, so it's worth the money, you know, to pump this water from Louisiana up to New York and Boston. Now, do you know how much you're paying for bottled water down at your local 7-Eleven store? I mean, when you pull into the gas station and you fill up and you pay $3 a gallon for this gasoline, you just really get perturbed, don't you, at the price of gas at $3 a gallon. You jump up and down, hoop and holler, and complain, and write letters to Dianne Feinstein and Ted Kennedy and complain about the price of gasoline and how the bad Republicans have boosted prices and one thing and another. I mean, if you're like I am, you do. All right. Did you know that water costs $9 a gallon out of the same store? Now, I've never heard anybody complain about paying $9 a gallon for water. You walk in, you buy your little, you know, your Ozarka bottled water. You come out, you jump in your car, and away you go down the road, and you're sucking on your water. And this water over here costs you three times as much as the gasoline, and you're not excited about that at all. I guess it's because when you filled up your car there, it cost you $85 to top off your tank. But it only cost you 89 cents to buy that 6 or 8 or 12 gallon, 12 ounces or 16 ounces of water. You buy one of them little thingies of water at 16.9 ounces, and it costs 89 cents. That's 89 cents a pint. How many pints are there in a gallon? There are eight. Eight times 89 cents. Well, that's only $7.12. Maybe we're doing a little better here, but the last numbers I saw was $9 a gallon is the nationwide average. So maybe we're buying our water here at only $7 a gallon, pretty cheap. Boys and girls, at $7 a gallon, we can pump water anywhere in America, just like we pump gasoline and oil today. And in fact, let me give you another eye-opener. I was reading an article here out of the same series, and maybe I'll come to it, maybe I won't, but this lady was paying $250 a month on her water bill, and a private company comes in. This is called privatization. And many of these big corporations now are coming in here, and they're buying the water companies of your cities. In fact, they're going around to the various mayors, and they're paying the mayors. They bribe them, bribe the mayor of your city. And they say, we'd like to buy your waterworks. You got this aged system that goes back to 1900, and we're going to come in here with the Bechtel Corporation, and we're going to buy it all for you, and we'll provide the water. Privatization, we call that. Well, this lady was paying $250 a month, and her water bill goes up to $1,200. Now, I don't know what business this lady is in, but she's paying $250 a month for water. Evidently, she's running a factory of some kind of a business that uses a lot of water. And all of a sudden, now the city comes in, sells their water system to some corporation, of which there's three or four big ones in the world, and her water bill goes up by about four or five times. Now just picture this. Maybe your water bill's $40 a month, and it goes up by five times. Well, that's $200. If your water bill goes from $40 to $200, is that going to shock you? Well, it probably will, but you'll sit back, shut up, and pay the bill, because what else are you going to do? You don't have any other source. And if you're living in the city, you can't drill a well anymore. So if you have a well, you know, this happens a lot of time. I'll tell you a quick story here. I had an old buddy. He had a house in 7 acres out in, on Eustick Road in Boise. And he had a well and a septic tank out there. And over time, developers had bought up all the farmland around him over here and developed it. He was sitting in a little island of 7 acres over here with a well and a septic tank. And he's grandfathered in. He's got his water rights. Now, once you buy one of these houses that's hooked up to the city water, like I did, you know, on Denton Street, I gave up my water rights. I was a modern American. I said, oh, hell with this ditch stuff over here. I'm going to get my water out of the pipe like everybody else. So I just abandoned my water rights, and I went with the city. And, of course, when the water is $30 a month, that's dirt cheap. Wait until it goes up to $200, and then you'll find out how valuable those water rights were that you gave away. So in the last program, or the one before that, I told you about Colorado. Now, if you're in Colorado or you're in some place like I am here in Missouri, the water under your place is yours, and you want to drill your well today, and you want to establish your water rights, whatever they are, today, at today's prices. Because in the future, they're going to cut back, and I'll show you after we take our break, how that cutting back on your water rights is going to affect you economically in the future. Hang on here while I give you a reminder here to satisfy the FCC and the various and sundry governmental agencies. You're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of the authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, or they may be racial or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may or may not be endorsed or totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about your water rights. Now, so far, we have been talking about water rights as they affect the rural people out here in the countryside. And there's great opportunities. Now, if you have an opportunity to buy the water rights of your neighbor over here, by all means, do it. And it may be that if you're in a dry area or one of these days, like I was reporting here in the past, in Nevada, for instance, where water is short, there has been a concerted effort to drive you ranchers off of your ranches through economic means, run you bankrupt. Government policy is designed to bankrupt you. And then when you abandon your water rights that go back to the Mining Act of 1866, they can come in, take your water rights, and then sell it to Las Vegas or Reno or somebody else. And when they do that, they're going to get substantially more. Now, I was talking to a guy out there, and he said agricultural water in Nevada is about one-third to one-tenth the amount that it is sold to the city. So this is pretty typical of eminent domain actions also. You take Mrs. Kello, remember the famous eminent domain lady up in Connecticut, I believe it was, and they came in and took her house, and she sued, and she went to the Supreme Court, and I think she argued the wrong argument from what I've been reading, that she said, you can't do that, and I think the correct argument was, that's fine, but pay me what you owe me for my property. Now, the essentials of eminent domain work like this. The developer, he eyeballs a piece of real estate over here, and he says, my God, if I had that piece of real estate, which belongs to all of these residential owners over here, well, I could build a Holiday Inn over there or a shopping mall or something, and I could make a lot of money. So he goes down to the, he sites it first of all, and he gets his architects out there, and they work on it and say, yeah, we think that'll work. Then he goes to the mayor and the city council, you know, behind closed doors, and he says, hey, listen, what's the chances of getting this rezoned over here and using the city's eminent domain power to take this property over here? And this will increase your tax base by $500,000 or $1 million a year, and that's good news for the city council and the mayor. And so they say, well, that's the reason that we want to do this. And so they come out and they condemn your house. Now, you're only paying, you know, maybe, say, $3,000 a year in property tax. But this Holiday Inn's going to be paying $500,000. And so that's music to the ears of mayors and city council. And that's what happened to Mrs. Kello. Now, in order to build a Holiday Inn, we have to rezone this property from residential to commercial. Now, the difference between residential and commercial is 3, 4, 5, 6, up to 10 times more for this commercial property. So they come in and condemn your property for one-tenth of its commercial value. And then when they've paid you 10 cents on the dollar, they rezone it to commercial, which now makes it worth 10 times more for the real estate development. Oh, wait a minute, boys and girls. That's what they're doing to us on water. You see, out in California where there's a real water shortage in the Colorado River Basin, you know, stretching from Colorado through 6 or 8 states, you know, Arizona, New Mexico, not New Mexico, I should say, Arizona, California, Utah, Wyoming, Montana, and Colorado, of course. And those states now, they depend upon that Colorado River. And the Colorado was producing about one half to one third its normal rain or its normal runoff, and so there's more and more people demanding more and more water, and California is taking more than their fair share. So in the Agricultural Examiner, their Agribusiness Examiner, put out by A.V. Krebs, so let me give you his name and number here. Now this particular newsletter is a liberal newsletter. And so I warn you, you know, most of you people are conservatives. I want to tell you, this is a liberal newsletter, A.V. Krebs. It's called the Agribusiness Examiner, number 499, and it's on water, fighting the corporate theft of our water. Corporate theft of our water. So I thought, you know, I think I'll put out a little bulletin here and say, listen, did you know that there's a corporate theft of water going on? I don't know that they're exactly stealing it. They're doing it legally. Just like taking Mrs. Kello's land was done legally. They don't violate the laws. They go create the law that they want and then use that law that they just created to take your property. That's not theft. It's a taking protected by the Fifth Amendment. Now, I'm not here to tell you that you can prevent the taking. I'm here to tell you that you should get paid 100 cents on the dollar for your water, or for your land, or whatever else the government takes from you. I don't think Mrs. Kello should stand in the way of the progress of the cities, or the states, or the counties. I mean, if the government needs to build a freeway through your property in order to benefit millions of people, I think that you ought to get the hell out of the way so that we can build our freeway. But I think that a freeway project that's costing millions and oftentimes billions of dollars ought to have enough money in there to pay the landowners for their property and to pay them at a fair market price rather than steal it from them. Now, down in the Southwest, we have a theft problem going on with the Indians. See, the Indians were forced off of their land in North Carolina, and they were forced to go to Oklahoma, or they were taken off of their land and put on reservations in New Mexico and Arizona and so on. Then, not only did we take their land away from them, pay them pennies on the dollar, then we forced them down into Oklahoma and New Mexico, which has got to be, you know, the poorest ground in the country. And then they found oil down there. Isn't that just the way life is? You steal this guy's ground, and you give him this wasteland over here, and the dummy finds oil on it. And so, of course, then they go down there, and they steal this oil by giving the Indians 1/8 of the value of the oil in the ground. That's the normal. You know, we're going to drill a hole, take out 7/8, and give you 1/8. You own 100% of it. But in order for us to get the oil out, you got to have our $1 million rig to come over here and drill the hole in the ground. So we're going to give you 1/8. And once they sign you up for that 1/8, then they come in here. Who's counting? Who counts the barrels of oil coming out of the ground? You? Oh, no. You're not counting the oil coming out of the ground. The oil company counts the oil coming out of the ground. So then we find that the oil companies are stealing millions of barrels of oil that they don't report to the Indians and don't pay them their 1/8. And so they take 100%. Isn't that just real special? All right. Now, you can go hire a lawyer, but then all you're doing is bringing in another set of thieves to deal with the first set of thieves, which may be in response to dealing with the first set of thieves, which is the government. So you got the government thieves, then you got the corporate thieves, and then you got the lawyer thieves. And then we get down to you. And you're working through these three sets of entrenched thieves who are stealing from you. And you think that the lawyer is your friend, sir. And that's because you hired the lawyer to protect your interests. Well, let me explain to you how this lawyer thing works as we're thinking about this in terms of water and water rights. A lawyer is an entrepreneur. He runs a little small private business. His business is solving legal problems for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife, the general public. In order for him to do that, he has to have a license. So he goes to school, develops his intellectual abilities, he learns law, and he comes out here and he hangs up his shingle and he goes to work. And he has to have customers. All right, so you come in, and you knock on his door and say, hey, listen, the government's over here, or this, or somebody else over stealing my property, the bank or whoever. And so your lawyer says, well, that's against the law. They can't do that. And so he charges you a fee commensurate with, like maybe he's going to take a third, or maybe he's going to charge you $200 an hour, or. So, but, you know, you're just mad as hell because this, you can see this wrong that's being perpetrated against you, and you say, well, I've got to have some help here. And so this lawyer over here is going to be my salvation. He's going to be my helper. So you go hire this guy. All right. Now, the opponent could be the bank, could be the oil company, could be the government. The opponent over here wants to beat you in this court battle. Now, if you're dealing with the government, they're the ones that make the laws that you have to comply with. Furthermore, when you're dealing with the government over here, you got to pay for the government's attorney through your taxes. Then you got to go pay for your attorney. So you're actually paying for both sides of the litigation. Did you know that? That's when you're dealing with the government. Now, when you're dealing with another corporation, these guys have lots of money, so they hire the best lawyers that money can buy. And some lawyers aren't as good as others, as was exemplified by our former Supreme Court Chief Justice Warren Burger when he said 90% of the trial lawyers in America are incompetent. So 9 out of 10 of the lawyers that you go hire anyway are incompetent. So now you've gone down here and you hired one of these incompetent lawyers who is an entrepreneur who is struggling to make a living, just like you and me and everybody else, but he's incompetent. I mean, if this guy goes into court and does battle with the 10% of the lawyers who are competent, who the oil companies and the banks and the government all hire, because they've got the money, so they hire the 10% of the lawyers who are competent, which leaves you with your slim, skinny budget to hire the incompetent nincompoop who couldn't win a case if his life depended upon it. And so your lawyer now is approached by the bank's lawyer or the oil company's lawyer to have dinner and maybe a round of golf at the country club. It's done all the time. So here's the bank's lawyer or the U.S. attorney or the government lawyer or the oil company lawyer. He's taking your lawyer to lunch or dinner or both and to a round of golf. And naturally, while they're there, they will be talking. And when they're talking, do you think maybe they might be talking about your case? Whether it's over water or oil or the foreclosure on the house or the barn or the, you know, whatever it is, the farm. And so they're there talking. And so the opposing counsel says, how much is this guy paying you? And he says, well, he's paying me $200 an hour, or he's paying me $5,000, or he's paying me one-third. And so your opposing side offers your lawyer as much as or more than you're paying to lose the case. Do you think that goes on in America? Hey, partner, you ain't just a whistling Dixie, goes on every day. It's part and parcel with the theft, the thievery business called lawyering. Lawyering. I think that's the way you pronounce that. Lawyering. I can tell you a number of cases that I've seen live and direct and up close and personal, and just use your head now, boys and girls. Just start thinking about that. Put yourself in the lawyer's position for a minute. And you're representing me, see? And I've got this problem over here with the bank. And the bank wants to foreclose on me, and maybe it's worth $1 million. So I go to you and I hire you, and I'm going to pay you $25,000 to represent me. And there's $1 million foreclosure. Now, the bank would like to expeditiously win this case so that they can get $1 million from me. They want to take my farm and all of my hard work over the last 30 years. They want to foreclose on me. And what's standing in the bank's way is you. You are standing in the bank's way. And you're getting paid a paltry $25,000 from me, which, you know, to me is a lot of money. And I'm paying you $200 an hour. And you should be able to go in there and solve this bankruptcy problem under Chapter 11, you know, for a whole lot less than that. But, you know, I'm paying you the $25,000. The bank comes along and offers you $50,000 to lose. I'm paying you $25,000 to win. The bank comes along and says, hell, we'll give you $50,000 to go in there and lose. Now you're getting paid $75,000. You can't miss. Now, if you want to make the $75,000, it's fairly simple for you, the entrepreneurial lawyer. All you got to do is to make a mistake. Fail to file the right papers at the right time, you know? The things that terrify you of going into court of and by yourself, oh my God, I might forget to do something and I'd lose. So I'm going to hire a lawyer and guarantee my loss. That's right. If you went into court pro se, you might lose. So you hire a lawyer and guarantee your loss. Well, not exactly guaranteed. Sometimes the fools win accidentally. 6%. No, that's not very much. 6%. They screw up. The jury comes back with a wrong verdict for both sides. Then we have to go to appeals. That costs you another $50,000 or $100,000. You see how this game's being played? And how you're being played for a sucker. In valuable litigation, you got a plan on paying your lawyer like O.J. Simpson. He paid his dream team $3.5 million to win. And they won. Now, when you got lots of money, you can win in court. When you don't have lots of money, then you got to rely upon yourself. Now, I want to point out that most people, when they call the law school, well, I hired a lawyer, but I was afraid I might screw it up. Did you know that there's two cases that protect you against screw-ups called Haynes versus Kerner and Town of Okoboji versus somebody? which says that a pro se litigant can't be held to the same pleading standards as a licensed lawyer. If your lawyer goes in and screws up, you're out. If you go in and screw up, you get overs. Did you know that? All right, just tuck it away in your heart. And your chances of winning pro se are greater than if you hire an attorney by 10 percentage points. 10 percentage points coming out of the chute, and all you got to do is get on the witness stand and testify. Your chances of winning as a pro se litigant go up to 55% win and 45% lose if you're properly trained. I mean, if you had a little training and you knew what to do and you knew how to dot the I's, cross the T's, and file the paperwork on time, your chances of winning go up to just a little bit better than 50-50. Did you know that? Just thought I'd throw that out there for a... And then if you throw in the graft and corruption and the buy-offs and the buyouts and one thing and another, and the fact that we only lose, or we only win 6% and we lose 94% of the time, your chances of winning go up pretty dramatically. Now I want to tell you about the Agribusiness Examiner. You can get this free. This is a free publication. But the Krebs depends upon volunteers to pay a little bit, you know, to free will offering or whatever you want to call it. So I'm going to recommend that you send him $30 a year. You get two publications. I don't know if $30 a year is enough, but I'm going to suggest that. Now there's two publications. One's called the Agribusiness Examiner. The other's called the Calamity Howler. They come out every week. That's 12 pages. And you get both publications. That's 24 pages a week. So that's 24 times 52, which is 1,248 divided by, and then let's just take $30, dollars, .00 divided by 1,200. And that's only 0.2.5 cents. That's 2.5 cents a page. 2.5 cents a page, which is about commensurate with what you're paying for the international forecaster, which is, you know, 6 cents a page, as I recall. 6 cents. So if you paid 2.5 cents, $30 for the Agribusiness Examiner and $30 for the Calamity Howler, just as a free will offering, be $60 a year for both publications. More than 1,200 pages, it'd be about a nickel a page. I think that is about commensurate with the international forecaster, and I think that's a reasonable price to pay. Now, Krebs, all you got to do is go to avkrebs@comcast.net. So it's just one word, A-V-K-R-E-B-S. A-V-K-R-E-B-S, avkrebs, @comcast.net to subscribe. Comes on the internet and comes out once a week. I forgot what day of the week it is. Not really important. The last one I got here is marked April the 30th. So I think that was earlier this week, about Monday. And he's got one here called Fighting the Corporate Theft of Our Water. So let me get you started here and then we'll take this up next time. All across the United States, municipal water systems are being bought up by multinational corporations, turning one of our last remaining public commons and our most vital resource into a commodity. The road to privatization is being paved by our own government. The Bush administration is actively working to loosen the hold that cities and towns have over public water supplies, enabling corporations to own the very thing we depend on for our survival. The effects of the federal government's actions are being felt all the way down to the Conference of Mayors, which has become a feeding frenzy for corporations looking to make sure that nothing is left in the public's hands, including clean, affordable water. Documentary filmmakers Alan Snitow and Deborah Kaufman recently teamed up with author Michael Fox to write Thirst, T-H-I-R-S-T, Thirst, Fighting the Corporate Theft of Our Water, published by Wiley, 2007. The three followed water privatization battles across the United States from California to Massachusetts and from Georgia to Wisconsin, documenting the rise of public opposition to corporate control of water resources. They found that the issue of privatization ran deep. We came to see that the conflicts over water are really about fundamental questions of democracy itself. Who will make the decisions that affect our future, and who will be excluded? Well, they wrote in the book's preface, and if citizens no longer control their most basic resource, their water, do they really control anything at all? As the effects of climate change are being felt around the world, including decreasing snowpacks and rainfall, water is quickly becoming the market's new holy grail. I'm going to put my mark right here. Now, I want to point out, global warming has, or climate change, has an effect. Now, I did a little science research the other day, and sunspots are increasing. And because of that, we're beginning to see some upsets in the weather. Now, whether global warming is caused by power plants, coal-fired power plants, has never been established. Global warming is going on. What's causing it? I don't know. I suspect that it's God Almighty himself, because we're getting ready now for the great final act in mankind's history. This is the final act of mankind's history. Then we're going to go into God's history called the millennium. But for the first 6,000 years, that's our role on stage here. As Shakespeare said, you know, all the world is a stage, and you and I are actors on it. All right, now, be that as it may, we have to face the reality that there's less snow in the Sierras this year than there have been in the past decades or in decades in the past. There's less water running down the Colorado River today than there has been in the past. That's the reality. That's where we're at. Now, I pointed out to you earlier in the show, there's no shortage of water, but there's a shortage of cheap water. And water is going to become more expensive, whether we like it or not. That's the reality of life. It's going to become more expensive. That's why I thought I would alert you, as I did in a couple of programs past. You want to secure your water rights right now. Don't waste another minute. Secure your water rights, whatever they are, wherever you're at, wherever you're located. So that later on in time, I'll give you some more reports here next time, there's going to be cutbacks in your water rights. And when that happens, you want to get paid for it. Make sure that when they come in to take your water rights by eminent domain, that you're able to make them pay you every dollar that those water rights are worth. Don't settle for 10 cents on the dollar or 2 bits on the dollar. Make sure that you get paid 100 cents on the dollar for your land, for your water, or whatever it is the government wants to take. Because you can rest assured that the city of San Antonio, when push comes to shove, that the legislature of Texas is not going to let one person raising catfish imperil a quarter of a million people by saying, you can't have this water. Tain't gonna happen. So make sure that before they steal your water, you get paid for it. Hey, we're running out of time. I got to give you a final reminder here. Until next time, you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's about up. We're going to have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends. Mm-hmm.